Okay, here we go. It always starts with a very funny image of myself with the face stuck into the... Okay, so what's the plan for today? So we're back to brute, which maybe isn't sufficiently brute. And I felt that the last time was maybe too brute, maybe, because I felt that maybe it was a bit too vague, too hard to follow. So basically my plan for today is to repeat last time. I'm not sure it would be better, but it would be different and it would be a second time, and then it will be understood. So, and it's worth understanding it. So the point would be to repeat it so that we can understand it, so that we can then generalize it. And so that will be a part of what I want to do today. And the other part is, so there is one big lemma left behind last time, and I want to show you how to prove it. Yes.
By computer or?
No, I want to show you how to prove it in principle by hand.
Okay, that's good.
Okay. Good. So, first of all, but the order will be, I'll be alternating between the two subjects a little bit. So, first of all, let me remind you what is the main theorem. So, let R be the ring of rational functions in variables hi and ti, and ti are just e to the hi. So these are, if you have a tangle with n components, these are 2n variables. Okay? And sometimes, by the way, I will identify all the h's to a single h and all the t's, therefore, to a single t. And then it will be just two rational functions in two variables. So in so if it's 2n variables, it's a pretty big ring. If it's 2 variables, it's not so big. Okay? And I will call the... And everything will be completely neutral to this identification. Nothing will matter if I make this identification. So it's legitimate, okay? And then I will call elements of this ring scalars, okay? And then the main theorem is that the G0 invariant of any tangle T can be written in the form E of omega L and Q, where this just stands for some bigger expression, but anyway, omega is a scalar, L is a linear combination of things of the form HILJ with coefficient AIJ, which are integers, not scalars, are even weaker, they're less, they're just integers. So this is really a matrix. So L is really a matrix, but it's a matrix that represents a quadratic form. And Q is also a matrix, Bij, Eif, so it represents a quadratic form, Bij, Eifj, where the Bij are the matrix entries, but they are scalars. So there is more information inside each one of them. Okay? And then that expression, E of omega LQ, stands for the ordered exponential of omega E to the L plus Q, where, remember, a commutative polynomial or a commutative power series, once you specify how to order the variables, becomes an element in the universal enveloping algebra. So this is an element in the universal enveloping algebra of G0 to the power n. Okay, so you put the E's first, then the L's, then the F's, and this same thing for each strand. Okay, and then the whole proof follows from 4 lemmas. And again, I remind you what the lemmas say. So, first lemma is that the value of an individual crossing, so a plus minus crossing placed on strands 1 and 2, is Okay, the standard math expression for it is it's the exponential of h1l2 plus e1f2. And alternatively, it's the ordered exponential of the formula written here, where the e is placed on the first strand and the l and the f on the second strand. And this is a special case of this, right? I mean, really, you could put another L here, and so really, I could have labeled the names L2, F2, and E1, put here, so replace this by E1, L1, F1, replace the second one by E2, L2, F2, and that's the same thing, because all I did is I introduced new variables, this one, and that one, that plays no role. I specified where to, how to order them, but they don't appear in the expression. Okay? Now, and then there was a second formula, four formulas, three more formulas. So one is, if you have e to the gamma l plus beta e, where gamma and beta, where gamma and beta are scalars, but I actually don't mean scalars in this sense. I mean variables that commute with everything else. So maybe in a bigger or smaller world of scalars. Okay? So the ordered exponential of gamma L plus beta E in the LE order, this just means, really, e to the gamma l times e to the beta e is equal to the ordered exponential of gamma l plus e to the gamma beta l, beta e, I. Sorry, my e's and my l's look too similar. This is an e, and this is also an e. Okay? In the el order. Okay? So this just means, first put the e's, so it's e to the gamma beta e times e to the gamma l. Okay? Likewise, an ordering formula, a reordering formula to reorder fl to lf. And finally, a reordering formula to order an fe to an ef. And this one is much harder. It's written here. Okay? But, you know, harder or not, that's what it is. Okay? Now, we have proven all of these. Sorry, we've proven 0 to 2. And we've also proven 3 at delta equal to 0. And they all had uniform proofs. The uniform proof was you find a matrix representation, and you do computations in that matrix representation. So let me remind you, here is the matrix representation up above. So H is this matrix, E is that, L is that, F is that, and 0 is that. Here is a verification that the commutation relations hold. Let's execute it once again just to verify that that it's all true. Well, it's all true. Here is the statement of the main theorem. And for the proof of the lemmas, all I need to do is to, let me execute all of them at once because we've done it already. So all I need to do is to compute the left-hand side and the right-hand side in each case and find that you get the same matrices. By the way, so I am not sure if this method of proof is sustainable or not. In other words, later we will be talking about G1. Later is pretty soon, by the way. So I mean, later we will be talking about G1, and I don't know a matrix representation for G1. Now, I would expect that it wouldn't be too hard to, that eventually one would be found, But I'm not sure if, so G1 is really SL2 at level 1, whatever that means. And when we get to SLN at level K, I'm not at all sure how to find matrix representation of that. So SLN is easy, but SLN at level K is not. There is a theorem by Addo, there is so-called Addo's theorem, which says that every finite dimensionally algebra has a faithful representation in matrices. I spent some time, not enough time, I don't know the proof of Addo's theorem. If somebody wants to learn it and talk about it, that would be wonderful. Anyway, I spent some time trying to read the proof, and at some point in the proof, you end up looking at the action of the Lie algebra on its own universal enveloping algebra cropped at a certain degree. But that's an exponential size thing. So the matrices that you get by following through Addo's naively appear to be huge. Now, we only need them for the purpose of, for an internal purpose. They don't become a part of the computations. They're only a proof that the computations work. So, you know, you could say, who cares? But, I don't know, it's inelegant, okay? Now, there are alternative ways to derive these lemmas. And we may at some point have to go through them. Okay. Anyway, claim these lemmas are enough. Okay? And the proof is really, you have to tell me if it's clear or not. Was it clear that these lemmas are enough? Let me go through it again. There is a little bit of subtlety. Because the things that need to get sorted are not exactly in that shape, but they are. You just need to be careful and to see that they are in that shape. So basically, why is the theorem true? The theorem is true because basically you compute the invariant of the tangle without doing any stitching. So basically, just a union of crossings, right? And the result is O of some function f, or you know what, no, let me call it zeta, because I think that's, oh, now I got used to writing psi, and it comes out psi. So let's write it, it's O of zeta, and then with a certain ordering. The ordering being, well, in fact, since the ordering is just the elf ordering on each strand, so it's elf, 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 right? And zeta is a product of things like this, and you look at these things and they're obviously of this kind. So far we're good. Namely, omega is equal to 1. The only place omega will be created is here. It will be called nu. Okay? L is the h times L2. So here I didn't bother to specify which h. I should have called it H1. Okay? So, right. So, so here h is... So this is a linear combination with integer coefficients of h, I, l, j, and this is a linear combination with scalar coefficients of e, I, f, j. So far we're good. And then the plan is to merge, well, to stitch. But how do you stitch? You just take two tensor factors and you put them one after the other, which really means that you remove the tensor factor. So, I mean, here it's E1, L1, F1. Here it's E2, L2, F2. You remove the tensor factor, and you get zeta of E1 L1 F1 E2 L2 F2 tensor the rest. And the problem, so zeta is the same, zeta is still a function of as many variables as before, but now I put several on the variables on, of the variables on the same strand. But they are no longer in elf order, they're in elf order. So I need to swap the E across the F. I need to swap, after the, doing this, I need to swap the L across this, the E, and so on. Okay? So but so on is not that big because I have only three variables, so only three pairs of swaps that I might need to do. And these are the LE to EL, the FL to LF, and the FE to EF swaps. And then the next thing I need to verify is that all of these swaps, or that the formulas that I gave here, apply to every zeta that may ever occur here, and output zetas of the same kind. In other words, I have to explain how these formulas apply for anything of the form omega e to the L plus q, and why they output again something of the form omega times e to the L plus q. So this is in principle a completely trivial lemma. There's nothing intrinsically difficult about it, okay? Let's verify it. So, okay, I want to do an LE to EL swap. Okay? Am I wasting your time?
No.
Okay, good. Sorry, so I want to do an EL to LE, an LE to EL swap. Doesn't matter which way I want to do it, okay? So, but I have this, not that, right? However, much of this is irrelevant. So omega is a scalar. It has no E's and L's and F's in it. It's just placed out, in some sense, it's placed outside, right? It has E to the H's, and E to the H's are placed outside. So it just doesn't matter what, so omega doesn't participate. So you just, you know, you will be copying it from this zeta to the next zeta, okay? Also, within L and Q, the only terms that matter are, okay, really I need to swap, you know, not an L across an E, but one specific L, so an L3 across an E7. Okay? So this formula, of course, is true with indices, right? The variable names here are dummy. I could have written here L3 everywhere and E7 everywhere. L3 everywhere, E7 everywhere. L3, E7, E7, L3. Okay? So basically, all the terms in L plus Q that contain no L3 or E7, again, are irrelevant. They are placed in other places of the formula, and it just doesn't matter if I swap an L across an E somewhere here. Okay? So within L plus Q, I just copy all the terms that don't contain L3 or E7, I copy them verbatim, with no change. So I only need to care about the terms that contain an L3 or an E7. The term containing an L3 will be a linear combination, right? So what could multiply an L3? A linear combination of H's with integer coefficients. So in this formula, so this formula is true in general, but in our case, gamma is linear combination of H's, and beta, likewise, beta is anything that could multiply E7. What could multiply an E7? A linear combination of F's with scalar coefficients. So this is linear combination of F's with scalar coefficients, right? And now all I have to check that the right-hand side will be the same. So what is the right-hand side? Gamma L3 is again, it's a gamma, so a linear combination of H's multiplied by an L. So that's again an L-type thing. And it gets added to the rest of the L. So it's still an L-type thing. And here, I'm looking at the wrong line. It doesn't matter because they're the same. But here it's e to the gamma. E to the gamma is, e to a linear combination of H's is a product of e to the H's. Okay? But a product of e to the H's is a scalar. So this is a scalar. And then I have a scalar times a linear combination of F's with scalar coefficients times an E. So the result is again a quadratic of this type. So QED for this. Are you okay?
We good. Kind of extend.
Is it better than last time?
Yeah.
Good. Sorry, what?
No, sorry, I just, we can extend, like, they don't have to be Z, but we can use Q.
Q, but then you'll have fractional powers of E to the H, of T.
And
so, okay. Right? I mean, if gamma was 1/3,
then you get t to the 1/3.
Then you'll get here t to the 1/3. Yes.
But okay, but that's okay too, right?
Okay. For whose purpose?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. I mean, your ring of scalars becomes a bit bigger.
Yeah.
And therefore, your computation's a bit slower,
yeah.
Or your bounds on the computation are a bit slower, but it's illegitimate. Now, I know why you're asking, of course, and indeed there are cases, so basically there are cases in knot theory where, roughly speaking, instead of having a crossing between two strands, you want them to only half cross,
yeah.
And then travel together. So sort of, instead of crossing, you want them to half cross and then merge. And in that case, you'll get half powers. Your gamma will be, the corresponding gammas will get 1/2 in them. But everything works in a slightly bigger ring. Okay. Okay. The only remaining mess is with 3. Okay? So, okay, sorry, 2 is swapping an F and L, it's exactly the same as swapping an L and an E, so there's no need to talk about it again. And with F and L, sorry, with 3, the answer, the same thing I need to go through the discussion again, just to verify that, you know, that applies to all possible inputs, and the output is a legitimate output, okay? So, again, this was written for generic ENF, but it's also true if it was E2 and F3 that I needed to swap. And of course, the same would be added. Should I add it, the same superscripts, subscripts here? So E2F3, it's not so hard. E2F3, good. And now, the omega part doesn't have E's or F, so it doesn't participate, so it just gets copied from this zeta to that zeta. But something else gets added to it. So nu is really a multiplicative factor. So the new omega after the swap will be different from the old omega because a nu gets added to it. We have to verify that nu is of the right form. We'll do it in a minute. Okay? Within L plus Q, L is totally irrelevant because L contains only H's and L's, and I'm swapping an E and an F, who cares? So the L part just gets copied from this zeta to that zeta, irrelevant. And again, within Q, the part that contains no E2 or F3 gets copied, because again, it doesn't participate. And the only part that matters is the part that contains an E2 or an F3. But that part, since we're quadratic in the E's and the F, that part is made of three subpart. The part that has both E2 and F3, and then the coefficient of that part, delta, is just one of these b's here, so delta is a scalar. And then, once you take away this part, you still have things that are linear in E2. The things that are linear in E2 will have a coefficient beta, where beta is a linear combination of f's with scalar coefficients. So, I can short this, so it's r combination of f's, okay? And likewise, alpha is a r combination of e's, okay?
So f has to be different from 3, right?
The f has to be different than 3, though it is irrelevant for the right-hand side. So here, f3 is not appearing, and here, E2 is not appearing. Had this not been the case, the lemma would be false. Okay? However, at the moment I'm not trying to prove the lemma, I'm assuming the lemma. And the only thing I care about is whether the right-hand side is of the right form. And it would be regardless. So. Okay, so you're right that the F's here do not contain an F3, but that's only half relevant for. Okay, so now you just check. So if delta is a scalar, then 1 plus H delta to the minus 1 is again a scalar, so nu is a scalar, so we're good. Nu is a scalar, so it's okay to multiply it by everything here. You look at this quadratic form that you see here, and here, alpha times beta is a combination of E's times a combination of F. So it fits into Q. This is a combination of beta is a combination of F's times the NE. So again, it fits. This fits. Everything fits. We're good. QED. Okay. Furthermore, once you identify all H's and T's are identified, this is Pauli time, okay? Because basically there is only a polynomial amount of information here. I'm saying Pauli time, I can bound the polynomial. There is only a polynomial amount of information in each such, say, Q is the most complicated part of this. And how much information is there in Q? It's a matrix. So size n squared, of coefficients, which are rational functions, this is, I have to bound the degree of these rational functions. Once you bound the degree, and the degree is bounded by the complexity, so about n, so rational functions of degree n have at most n integer coefficients, or since it's in 2n variables, it's really 2n, but still it's polynomial amount of information, and you do stupid manipulation to it that takes polynomial amount of time. You need to do linearly many swaps here. That's nothing. Okay. Okay. So what do I owe you? Well, I owe you an implementation. I showed you a rough implementation last time, but I think it's much better if I complete the proof of lemma 3. Okay? So let me take a picture of the blackboard, and then, where is the, oh, sorry, here's the mouse. So let me take a picture of the blackboard, and then, wait, this is AKT17, and what should be the title? The main G0 theorem and lemmas, whatever. Okay, so now I can erase it and put it up above. Not yet, it's still processing. So I can still erase it. Oh, I erased a part of the lemma. Okay, well, whatever. So,
is it the right, I saw the half algebra thing.
Sorry?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. So, you know, maybe I'll tell you, there is a recurring trick in mathematics. So let me explain why it's relevant. So remember that I know lemma 3 in the case where delta is equal to 0, because then it's just a product of exponentials, and that can be done with representation means, okay? Like the quadratic terms is not susceptible to representation theory. That's where the problem is. But anyway, but if you drop the quadratic term, you're left with some identity of exponentials, but with arbitrary scalar coefficients. So, you know, if you think of the functions e to the alpha x, then the linear span of these functions is all functions, basically. You can write every function as a combination of functions of the form e to the alpha x. At least this would be true if you discretize space, right? Because, you know, at least it would be true on a compact set. Okay? So basically, if you know something for all exponentials, you know it for all functions. In fact, one common name for this is the Laplace transform, right? You can write functions using an even more common name for it is the Fourier transform. So sort of we are in algebra, so multiplying or not multiplying by an I is irrelevant. And if you think of it in this term, every function in the world is a linear combination of e to the I a alpha x's. So if you know something for all e to the I alpha x's, you know it for all functions. So really, I'm going to tell you about a trick from sort of reanalysis. Okay? And let me now say it in a slightly less mysterious language. So here is a recurring trick. If you have an arbitrary function phi of x, then phi of x times e to the alpha x is equal to phi d to dx e to the alpha x. D to the alpha. E to the alpha x. Namely, so think of phi as a polynomial. If you have a polynomial of x, or you know, if it's not a polynomial, then it's a power series, and then you can substitute for the variable x the derivative d to the alpha. Okay? And then d to the alpha e to the alpha x, what it does is it, well, you differentiate an exponential, you get the same exponential with an x pulled down. But this x is now suppose it was sort of higher order polynomial, so you need to differentiate a second time. The x is neutral to the alpha differentiation, so it's a constant. So the x stays, and you differentiate again that with respect to alpha, that pulls down another x. So basically, differentiating n. So if phi is x to the n, then this holds. And if it's true for all polynomials, it's true for all phi's. Okay, but this means that now evaluate both sides at alpha equals to zero at the end after the differentiations. So you find that phi of x is equal to phi d to d alpha e to the alpha x, all of this evaluated at alpha equals to zero. So this is a lovely trick, and it is especially useful if you want to evaluate a linear functional on both sides. On the left-hand side. Why? Assuming that you already know how to evaluate it on exponentials. Okay? Why? Because you want to evaluate a linear functional here, you evaluate it on here. Now, differentiation with respect to alpha, well, this is just evaluating at alpha equals 6.5 and subtracting the evaluation at alpha equals 6. So, within the space of functions of x, this is a linear operation. So, if you know how to evaluate the linear functional on exponentials, you evaluate it on e to the alpha x, and then after the evaluation, you differentiate with respect to alpha. And so if you know how to evaluate a functional on exponentials, you know how to evaluate it on all functions using this trick. So this is a general trick. It's useful in many places. And let's apply it in our specific case. So in our specific case, I want to compute the ordered exponential of e to the delta EF plus alpha F plus beta E in the order FE, where I already know what to do in the case where delta equals to zero. Namely, I already know what to do in the case when I have an ordinary exponential. Okay? And furthermore, whatever this is, it's linear in the input. So it fits into my trick. Okay? So the only thing that doesn't fit is that later I will need to differentiate with respect to delta somewhere. And D to D delta is the most awkward expression in the world, other than variational derivatives, right? If this was a variational derivative, I would have to write delta. So for this silly reason, and only for this silly reason, I'm changing the name of T of delta to T. I just cannot write it as it is. Okay? So this is... Sorry, that was nonsense. Now let's do results. So this is E to the T E F, E to the alpha F plus beta E. Evaluated in the FE order. So I've split it so that now I have the exponential separate from the kind of unknown thing. The unknown, so this plays the role of phi. Okay? Furthermore, alpha and beta are already present, and I and what plays the role of x is f and e, so it's a two-variable version of that. So this is equal to O of e to the t d alpha. D beta. It doesn't matter. They commute. D alpha d beta. D beta d alpha. E to the alpha F plus beta E. In the order FE. Right? Every differentiation with respect to beta will lower an E. Every differentiation with respect to alpha will lower an f, so differentiation with respect to t d beta d alpha will give you a t e f, and that's what you want. Well, I just copied, okay? And furthermore, I don't even need to substitute alpha and beta equals to zero at the end, because, well, this was if I was not interested in keeping the exponential, but I actually am interested in keeping the exponential term as well. So I don't even need to do that. Okay, now, from the perspective, this should be thought of as a power series in with rational coefficients in E and F. From the perspective of such power series, this is a linear operator, and the operation O is a linear operation. So they commute. Okay? So I can pull the differentiation outside of the ordering. So this is E to the T d beta d alpha e to the, sorry, of the ordering of e to the alpha f plus beta e in the order ef. So let me copy the first part. It's e to the t d alpha d beta, because alphabetical order is better. They commute, it just doesn't matter. And now I come to the other point. If you know something for exponentials, you know it for everything, but right, I know how to do it for exponentials. This is the delta equals zero case. So this comes out to be e to the, at delta equals to zero, nu, if delta is equal to zero, nu is equal to one, so it drops. So, and this term drops also. So I just get minus alpha beta h plus alpha f plus beta e in the order E-S. But now, once again, this operator differentiation with respect to alpha and beta commutes or can be put inside. So this is O of e to the t alpha beta, sorry, e to the t d alpha d beta of e to the minus alpha beta h plus alpha f plus beta e in the ordering EF. And Lie theory is now out of the game. Now, call this quantity psi, and I want to know what this quantity is, but this is a calculus exercise. Okay, this is an algebra exercise. This is an exercise in standard commutative power series. There, no commutation relations need to be used anymore. In fact, no commutation relations were used at any point, right? Or maybe they were used, but they were used in the delta equals zero case. So at the moment, no more commutation relations are left. I need to know what the function psi is. What do I know about this function psi? So, it's a function of alpha, beta, h, f, e, and t. But I want to think of it as mostly as a function of t and the rest. Okay? So, psi at equal to 0 is equal to... So if t is equal to 0, I'm just this becomes 1, and I'm just left with e to the minus alpha beta h plus alpha f plus beta e. And the second claim is that psi satisfies a sort of heat equation. Okay? So the derivative with respect to t of psi is equal to... So if this is psi, I differentiate with respect to t. This pulls down a del alpha del beta to here. And what remains is the same. So this is a del alpha del beta psi. Okay? So that's a heat, well, it's a heat-like equation. This is a second-order operator. So, this is like the Laplacian. This is like, in fact, it is the Laplacian with respect to some weird quadratic form. But this is, and this is the time derivative, so it's like a heat equation. So you solve it like you solve a heat equation. Okay? Now, I don't know how to solve a heat equation, but let me point out or maybe I do know how to solve a heat equation, but I don't need to know. Okay? Let me point out that these two equations determine psi. Because everything here is in the world of power series. So if I know psi at t to the zero, if I know the coefficient of t to the zero, and I do because this is this, right, it's still a power series in all the other variables. So if I know it at t to the 0, I know the derivative with respect to t of psi, so I know the coefficient of t to the 1. And then keep going. If I know the coefficient of t to the 1, again I feed it. So basically, this determines psi. So in order to find... So it's enough if I show you a psi and verify that it satisfies this equation. It must be the right psi. There is a unique psi that satisfies these equations. So, I claim that the psi that satisfies this equation is the psi given by the lemma, namely by this formula here. Okay? So that doesn't... Okay, so let's check it. Where is the Mathematica session? Here it is. So, I ask the computer, with psi equals to nu e to the nu, basically the right-hand side, Subject to the rule nu is e to the 1 plus th inverse. This is the one, the same as before with t replaced by delta, delta replaced by t. Do simplify the Laplacian, sorry, the heat equation, del t minus of psi minus del alpha beta of psi, and also compute psi at t equal to 0. So if I will execute this line, I am hoping to get 0 on the left and the function I started from, this function, on the right. Good. QED. Now you can ask, I'm out of time, but you can ask how would you have guessed this psi? So the answer is, basically by one way is to use the method of undetermined coefficients. In other words, you know from the theory of heat equations, or else you know by techniques that I will describe some other time, that the answer has to be, well, you know, heat equation is solved by convolution with Gaussians and convolution of one Gaussian with another. So right, this is a Gaussian. I want to convolve it with another Gaussian. The result is again a Gaussian. So I know the answer will be of the form nu times e to the... but essentially a quadratic. Okay? So you think of nu as an unknown function of t. You think of q as an unknown function of t. But at least now the shape of the equation is constrained. The shape of the answer is concerned. And now you substitute this back again into the heat equation. And introduces to an ODE, ordinary differential equation for nu, and an ordinary differential equation for q. And these ordinary differential equations are of the kind that here in Math 267 you learn about in the first week. So I think, I don't remember what they are, but they're easy to solve. So we're done. If I had more time, and I don't, I would show you the implementation and go again through the implementation and, well, but maybe next time. Okay.